Thank you, Meredith. That was really good. So, if you guys remember last time we all met, we were, Zach preached on the prophet Elijah and the prophets of Baal. And so now our next story in line that we're going through is the book of Daniel. So, if you guys here want to turn to Daniel chapter 1, and I'll just start out just to kind of give you guys a little context so you can know how just what this book is dealing with. I'll just start out by reading verse 1. In Daniel chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, into Jerusalem and besieged it." So what you have is Judah, who's like split off from Israel, like they're like together with Israel. They split off. They got taken over by Babylon, and Babylon was like a super corrupt like nation back during those days. And so their king Nebuchadnezzar, he's throughout the story, he's one of the he's a picture of the Antichrist. He's one of the types of the Antichrist because of just all the evil things that he does. And so he comes in and he takes Jerusalem, which is Israel's main city, and using Babylon, his nation. And Babylon is a picture of the world under Satan's dominion. So Daniel chapter 1, I'll read verses 2 and 3 now. It says, "And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, part with the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Asphines, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes." So what Nebuchadnezzar does is he basically takes the elite, highest, most famous and well-known people of Israel, and he takes them in because he wants to just do some things with them that we'll get into. And one of the people groups that says that he has to bring forth is the king's seed. And the king's seed, practically, that's a picture of like a child of God, because people who are saved are like the king's seed, because they're a child of the king. But in this case, they're the people. Like, this is what the line of Christ is on. Christ is the line of the king's seed, and he basically Nebuchadnezzar is the one of the types of the Antichrist. He's trying to get them, and he's trying to basically influence them in a bad way. So verses 4 through 7 say, "Children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning of the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah of Shadrach, to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego." So he tried to take these kids, and these kids are all like about 12 to 14 years old. So they're like younger than a lot of us here. And what he tries to do is conform them to the ways of Babylon, or like conform them to the ways of the world. And by changing certain things about them, he tries to change their speech, in verse 4, get them to talk about like the things of Babel, or talk in the Babylonian tongue, or like the world, is what it's a picture of. He tries to change their education, also in verse 4, the way they think. He tries to change their diet in verse 5, which We'll get into that in a little bit. And perhaps the biggest thing he tried to change is he tried to change their name. He tried to change their name or their identity. And so in verse 7, you might see all these like name changes that he's changing their names and think like what's the big deal about that? It's just a name. But if you look deeper into what these names actually mean, you'll realize like how subtle he was and what he was trying to do. In verse 7 it says, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name Belteshazzar. The name Daniel means God is my judge, and he had that changed to Belteshazzar, which means Baal's prince. And then the next one is to Hananiah of Shadrach. The name Hananiah means God is gracious, and Shadrach means illuminator of the sun god. That's what it's changed to. Mishael, which is the next one, meant God without equal, and that was changed to Meshach, which means who is like Venus. And then the last one is Azariah, which means God is my helper, and he changed that to Abednego, which is, means serpent of Nego. The devil will try to take God out of our names. He'll try to take God out of our identities and replace it with like the gods of this world, and put the gods of this world into our names. Now I'm going to read here verse 8, and just to kind of reestablish the context, I'm going to read verse 5 real quick, and then jump to verse 8. Verse 5 says, "And he appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king." Verse 8 says, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." So meat in the Bible is a picture of doctrine, and since this is the meat of like an evil king, Nebuchadnezzar, this is, in this scenario, it's a picture of bad doctrine. And so Daniel, he had it purposed in his heart that he wouldn't defile himself with the king's meat or with the bad doctrine. Another like good like synonym of the word purpose is declared. He had it declared in his heart that he wouldn't like involve himself in getting caught up in bad doctrine. And a good cross reference to that is Romans 12, 1 and 2. And that says, "I beseech you therefore, brethren, that by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." So Daniel made himself a living sacrifice by sticking up to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, and not letting Nebuchadnezzar like conform him to the ways of the world, because Daniel feared God more than he feared the person who took his people in captivity, and took them in chains. It doesn't matter who the king of the country is, it's who the king of your heart is. And like I said before, he was only about 12 to 14 years old. And I think that's awesome. And then a good reference for that, like that goes along with that, is 1 Timothy 4:12 says, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word and conversation, in charity and spirit, in faith and purity." Now I think that's an awesome verse for all of us, because I mean most of us in here are like pretty young, so I think that's a good verse that applies to us. So we'll see. Now I'm going to read verses 9 through 16 to see how this story finishes out. That says, "Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should he see your faces, worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and that countenance of the children that eat the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Then Melzar took away the portion of their meat, and the wine which they should drink, and gave them pulse. So what Daniel says is, he refuses to eat the portion of the king's meat, and he makes a deal. He says, look, let's, I just want to show you at the end of our 10 days, we're going to turn out like better than the people who ate the portion of the king's meat. And at the end of those 10 days that came out to be true, because, Daniel took a stand against the bad doctrine, and they like, it ended up paying out for him. So the next little story, most of you have probably heard the story in Daniel chapter 6. This is the story of Daniel in the lion's den. I'll just start out by reading it, and just by reading first verses in this chapter. In verse 1 it says, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these 3 presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give according unto them, the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because of an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault in him, found in him. Then he said, these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Then these presidents and the princes assembled together to the king, and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors of the captains, have consulted together to establish a royal statute, and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask for a petition for any of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing that it should, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore, King Darius signed the signed in writing the decree. So basically, these the like high ranking like officials of Babylon, they're jealous of the friendship that Daniel has with King Darius, who is the king after Nebuchadnezzar. They're jealous of the relationship that he has with King Darius, and so they're trying to basically like undermine like Daniel's friendship with him, and like basically trying to get him killed. And so basically what they do is they trick Darius into making a law to like that nobody would be allowed to worship like the God of Israel. Now verse 10, it says, now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being opened in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed, and gave thanks before God, as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said before the king, that Daniel, which is of the children of captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, which he heard these words, was sore displeased with him, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, that he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king, and said unto the king, "Know, O king, that is the law of the Medes and Persians, is that no decree nor statute which the king establishes may be changed." Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel, and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake unto, and said unto Daniel, "Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." So basically what happens is they made this, they tricked the king into this law, and they tell, they find Daniel, like, praying. And I think what's interesting is, like, after this law was passed, Daniel did the same thing that he did before. He opened, he, like, still got down on his knees and prayed it, like he did before. He didn't just, like, try to do it in secret. He was just, he did it the same way as he did before, because he was willing to, like, stand up for what he knew was right. And what I think is interesting is, like, the, like, faith that Daniel had was so strong that even, like, King Darius knew. He said that, in verse 16, that "thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." Like, King Darius, he didn't want to throw Daniel in the lion's den, because he knew, because, like, he really liked Daniel. He was friends with him. He didn't want him thrown in the lion's den, but he knew he had to because of the law that he made. So let's see how this story finishes out. Verse 17, it says, "And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet, and the signet of his lords, that purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were there instruments or music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went into the den of, and went in haste unto the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the den of the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God hath sent an angel that hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me. For as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. Then the king was exceedingly glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. So I think that's pretty cool. So Daniel was delivered out of being eaten from the lion's den, and if you allow God to be with you, he'll look out for you, and he'll like protect you even through, like, the hard times, like in Daniel's case, going through the lion's den. And the thing that sticks out to me the most is verse 18 that says, "Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were there instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him." Daniel, I mean, he probably got, like, best night of sleep he ever had. I mean, he's sleeping in a den with, like, 300-400 pound lions, and there's, I mean, with all their, like, mane they have and stuff, like, I mean, there's probably, like, 6 or 8 of them, and he probably got the best night's sleep he ever had. And yet here's the king, Darius. He's safe in his own palace, in the king's palace, and he can't sleep. He's pacing around all night because, like, it's better to be in the lion's den with God than safe in the king's palace without him. And yeah, I think this is pretty comparable to, like, figuratively, like, the life of a Christian, just, like, being used to what's, like, the, what doesn't seem to be, like, the most, like, ideal, comfortable situation, but, like, God is there to, like, look out for you. And yeah, overall, this story is a picture of the first coming of Christ, because just like Daniel, Or just like Jesus, like in verse 4, it says that Daniel was faultless, and they couldn't find any wrong against him, just like nobody could find any wrong against Jesus. And then just like Jesus, Daniel was he was betrayed with people trying to kill him. And then Daniel going into the lion's den is a picture of Jesus' death, and then him coming out of the lion's den is a picture of the resurrection. Now, so I'm going to go through one last story here, and that's in Daniel chapter 3. If you guys want to turn there with me. Sorry, I know it's a lot of reading, but so, and this story is the story of the three Hebrew boys besides Daniel, who we looked at earlier, who got their names changed. Who got their names changed, as we saw in chapter 1. And in Daniel chapter 3, verse 8, it says, "Wherefore at the time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, that ye fall down with worship the image which I have made, well, but if ye worship not, ye shall be cast in the same hour into the midst of the fiery furnace. Who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we are able to serve is to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. So these people, Nebuchadnezzar made a law that when like they hear the instrument sound, that they were supposed to like bow down to his golden like images and idols. And so they refused to do this because they didn't want to, like, they refused to worship the idols and the gods that Nebuchadnezzar had set up, because they were standing for what was true, even if it ended up costing them their lives. And Nebuchadnezzar, like, tells them that if they don't do this, they're going to be thrown into, like, a fiery furnace. But then they tell Nebuchadnezzar that if he does so, that their God would be able to deliver him. And so here we'll watch how it plays out. And that's verse 19. It says, Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace one seven times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and the other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace was exceeding hot, and the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, was astonished, and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, Did we not cast three men into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, True, O king. And he answered and said, Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fire furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire, and the princes of the governors and captains and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their heads singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, that they should, or that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own god. So that's, I think that's pretty cool. So Nebuchadnezzar was so mad that they wouldn't do what he said, that he ended up making the furnace like 7 times hotter than it was originally going to be. And what he did is he took the mightiest men out of his army, and he had them bind them up, and like they wore a bunch of stuff so like the heat wouldn't affect them, and the heat was so hot that it killed these men that were binding them up. It killed the people binding them up, and these three boys, they just willingly walked into the fire. They didn't fight it, and they were just fine, because God was protecting them, and the fire didn't even affect them. Now I think the coolest thing is in verse 24 when it says, Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, Did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, True, O king. He answered and said, Lo, I see 4 men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Now I think that's pretty cool. So yeah, they sent three men into the fire, and when Nebuchadnezzar, when he looked into the fire, he saw a fourth person in there, and he said that the figure of the fourth was like the Son of God. So Jesus Christ was in there with these 3 boys, like protecting them from the fire, because he's delivering them because they took a stand for him, and he's going to protect them, and like as a reward for doing the right thing and standing for him. And he delivered them even to the point where when they came out, they didn't even smell like smoke or anything. This book has some crazy supernatural stories. I think there's one common theme that they all tie back to, and that's God's faithfulness towards those who are faithful to him. These 4 boys, who are all about like 12 to 14 years old, here they are under captivity, 600 miles from their homeland, just being taken in by an evil king with an evil nation. 600 miles from home, they stayed faithful to God, and they didn't turn their backs on God this entire time. Even if they did turn their backs on God, like they would have had an excuse to do it. Like it's not that they were doing it to protect themselves from others finding out. Like nobody would have known if they turned their back on God. And I mean, even if they did know, then I mean they'd have an excuse for it considering the circumstances. But they valued their relationship with God more than anything else, so they stayed faithful to God and did what was right. I think just how faithful they were to God was pretty cool, because it shows how God was faithful to them in return because of their faithfulness to him. And a good verse that like kind of mirrors that point is Proverbs 28:20. It says, "A faithful man shall abound with blessings, but he that maketh haste to be rich shall not be innocent." And then another one that shows how rare faithfulness is like that is Proverbs 20 verses 6 and 7. It says, "Most men will proclaim every one his own goodness, but a faithful man who can find?" The just man walketh in his integrity. His children are blessed after him. One who is faithful is somebody that God can depend on, because if you're faithful and God knows that if he keeps coming back to you and to use you, that you'll keep delivering out and doing the job for him. And there's a parable in Matthew that I think goes along really well with this, and that's in Matthew chapter 25. This is last passage we're reading, verses 14 through 26, and it says, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into the far country, who called his own servants and delivered them into his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth, and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with him. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been a faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliveredst unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of thy Lord. Then he which had received 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine. His Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap not where I sow not, and gather where I have not strawed. So I think that's a cool story, because that's a picture of basically how God looks at us when he's wanting us to be faithful. God wants to see, like, what God wants somebody to give everything they possibly can, no matter how much, like, he's given them. Like, God cares more about how much of yourself that you give to it, rather than, like, how much you get out of it. Like, God wanted to see, wants to see who will make the most out of like the circumstances that God's given them, whether it's they're given a lot or given a little. It's God just wants to see if you're willing to put all your efforts into giving all that you can back to him. And I think it's a good idea for everyone just to look back and think if we are giving everything to him, and if we are being faithful. And I mean, and if like at the end of our lives, when we look back on it, if God will be able to say to us, Well done, thou good and faithful servant, like they said in this verse to them, to the people that gave everything that they had into it. So we just talked about all the people being faithful. Now I want to look at the contrary. I want to look at, like, the entire story since we started this entire study of the nation of Israel as a whole, and their unfaithfulness to God, how it came down. So we looked at their foundation with Abraham and Isaac, and leading into Jacob, and then we went over the story of Moses when they were delivered as God's chosen people, and then we studied Joshua, where they had victory after victory after victory, then going into David eventually, as David establishing them as the greatest kingdom, the greatest nation on earth during the time and David's establishing them in the Promised Land. Then they had the time of peace under Solomon, where they're established as the controlling nation of the planet at the time. And then as we studied last time, when Zach gave the message, how we started seeing the demise that they had with Elijah as their prophet. So you have all that. And then finally, as we saw in the first chapter of this entire book today, that they're now being taken captive by the world. Like, look at where they've come from. They had, just a few hundred years before, they had David on the throne, like in the Promised Land, in God's chosen land for his chosen people, and God was doing everything with them, to just a few hundred years later, they turned their back on God, so then they were taken into captivity by the world. During all that time, they had their ups and downs, but as long as they overall stayed faithful to God, they were his chosen people, and God was doing stuff with them. And they lost everything because they turned their back on God. To compare that to us, like, never let there be a day when God has to turn his back on you because you failed to be faithful to him, because that's the worst day of a saved person's life. Israel was still God's chosen people after it. Just like you can't lose your salvation, but you're no longer going to be what God uses to, like, carry out his work. Everyone will get off it at times, but overall, if, like, you're staying faithful as a whole, then, like, everything's going to turn out fine. Imagine being at Israel, like, being an Israelite at this time, just walking into captivity, thinking about, like, what you've heard, the stories of, like, your grandparents and, like, parents telling you of, like, the days when David was on the throne or like that they had heard about when David was on the throne and Israel was established as a strong nation. Like, think about just thinking about that, walking into captivity, and how sad it must have been just realizing what it's come down to compared to those times. I think it's summed up pretty good by, like, their thoughts on that by what it says in Psalms 137. Psalms 137, verses 1 through 4. And that says, "By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song. And they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, Sing us one of the songs of Zion." And then verse 4 says, "How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land?" God's chosen people had now gotten to a place where they couldn't even sing the Lord's song, where they couldn't even sing the Lord's song anymore, because of where they had come, and what their heart attitude had gotten to. And that's comparable to the church nowadays. There was a time when the church had the power of God behind it, and when being a Christian had a responsibility to it, and when the Bible used to mean something to it. But in today's Christianity, we live in a society where, like, they don't, or the society doesn't even know right from wrong, and a lot of that fall is because of the church not willing to, like, stand for the truth and take a stand for the truth, to basically keep everyone else in line. And a lot of the Christianity now has just turned, like, people getting fake because of that. Christianity has lost its fire and is afraid to take a stand, like, just like Israel in this book. So in our comparable scenario, we are to be like these four boys that we studied. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. We should be like them, sticking out among a nation that's doing the wrong thing. In a book where God turns his back on his own people due to their apostasy, you find some of the greatest stories on how faithful God really is to those who are faithful to him. I just think that's interesting. Like, you would think a book where God's turning his back on his people is something where like with unfaithfulness, but I mean within it you find how faithful God really is to the individuals who still like stand to do what's right and like purpose in their heart that they're going to do the right thing like Daniel did. In a fake Christianity that's turned their back on God, God is looking for those faithful few who will stand by the truth at all costs and not conform to this world, not change your identity to the identity of the world, and act how they want to act. So just the last verse, and then we're done. So just a few years after the events in this book took place, this was written by the prophet Ezekiel, and that is Ezekiel chapter 22, verse 30. And I think it sums up just everything that we've went over tonight. It says, "And I sought for a man among them that should make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I should not destroy it. But I found none." Stand in the gap and be someone who God can depend on to do his work, which is spreading the good news of what Christ did for us. That's all I got. Peter, do you want to close us out?